Hey everyone, this is John, and this is The Nintendo Show, episode 123 of the Best Damn Nintendo Podcast on the Internet. This is the official show for the month of November 2020, in which I will be talking about some news, as well as some new releases, and preview the games coming out in December. And as you can tell, I am solo for this one, so I'm going to jump right in just a second. The big topic for this one is going to be Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity, which is a game that I've been playing quite a bit of, and I like a lot. But before we get to that, let's jump in with some news. Not a whole lot in the way of new game announcements that popped out to me anyway this month. I just got a couple of games here that I think are worth mentioning. First up, Retro Machina is a game coming to the Switch in quarter one of 2021, and this is a puzzle adventure game in an isometric camera style. Also very like dystopian, sort of ruined future kind of setting to it that affects a lot of the visual elements, broken robots and run down areas, things that are overgrown with vegetation, that sort of thing. And when I was looking at some of the footage for this one, it reminded me in terms of the sort of mechanical goals of the game, of a game that the three of us all talked about last year, Hob, which is a game that we all really liked. And in that game, the mechanical elements of it were just about manipulating the environment and altering the position of terrain or structures or activating things that will allow you to access new areas, and just basically trying to work your way through this sort of tangled web, so almost Metroid-like, except instead of gaining like a bunch of new power-ups to open up your doors, you find new ways to interact with the environment that opens up your pathways for you. And it's a game that I really enjoyed, and a lot of those sort of environmental manipulation sort of elements seem like they're going to be a big part of Retro Machina as well. So that one is certainly on my radar for next year. And another one that's definitely on my radar for next year is Nioh: The World Ends With You, which is a follow-up prequel, I believe, to the DS game The World Ends With You, which came out, oh my goodness, probably 13, 14 years ago at this point. And that was coming out in 2021 from Square Enix. The World Ends With You is a game that I have limited experience with. I had it, I bought it originally on the DS back when it came out. But I played it for maybe 5 or 6 hours. And the combat system was, you know, a little confusing. There's a lot, maybe not so much confusing, that might not be the right word, but there's a lot to keep track of and controlling your top character with the face buttons and the bottom character on the touchscreen. You're trying to fight almost two battles at once. So it requires a really intense focus. And I liked it, but I didn't get very deep into it because at the time, my original podcasting partner, Carlos, bought Mario & Luigi Bowser's Inside Story, which is a game I was also looking really looking forward to, but I kind of had to make the choice between World Ends With You and Bowser's Inside Story, and after, you know, 3 or 4 days, we just decided to straight-up trade. He took my copy of World Ends With You, I got his copy of Bowser's Inside Story, and we never ended up trading back. We just traded for keeps, and no regrets. Bowser's Inside Story is a really, really great game, my favorite in the series. But, you know, it would be, it's kind of a blind spot that I wish I had taken more time to go back to in The World Ends With You. There have been a number of ports to all sorts of different platforms. You know, it was, of course, playable on 3DS because of backwards compatibility, but it came like to like Wii U, it's on Switch, it's on mobile platforms. There's a lot of different ways that you can play The World Ends With You. But, you know, for whatever reason, I just never went back to it. For all intents and purposes, it seems that none of the ports really capture the sort of dual screen gameplay mechanics of the original DS version. So, you know, that might have been a contributing factor to not indulging in any of these ports. But I still am looking forward to Nioh: The World Ends With You. It, of course, does not have those dual screen mechanics. Instead, you have more of a party battle system. It still has like the same bombastic visual style, a lot of like flair to it. And it's supposed to take place before the events of The World Ends With You, if that sort of thing matters. It is also using polygons as opposed to the 2D sprites that were in the original version. But it's really cool that Square Enix is doing a follow-up to this game. I like when Square Enix does these sort of, you know, off the beaten path, not Final Fantasy, not Dragon Quest, offshoot games, things like Octopath Traveler and Bravely Default, even something like Final Fantasy IV Heroes of Light, Rocket Slime. I like the weird stuff that comes from them. And I think it's something that I'm glad is coming to Nintendo systems. You know, while I do still really enjoy, you know, the Final Fantasies, I also really like when Square Enix just allows themselves to make like these sort of B-tier things and get creative with the gameplay. So, on to a couple of news tidbits here. Super Mario Maker is being removed from the Wii U eShop on January 13th of next year. So, you know, just 5 or 6 weeks before that is no longer able to be purchased on the Wii U eShop. It can still be downloaded. So if you have purchased it, you will still be able to re-download if for some reason, you know, you deleted it or needed to change a memory card or a hard drive or something like that. You'll still be able to, as long as the Wii U eShop is functional, you'll still be able to re-download the things that you have already purchased. And that uploading courses and downloading courses is going to be discontinued on March 31st of 2021. So you'll no longer be able to like have all the sort of online functionality. I suppose you still be able to make stages and have your friends play them as a social thing, you know, if you have people that want to come over and play your Wii U. But, you know, this sort of thing was inevitable. And I guess, you know, since it was just last year that sort of the original Wii eShop stuff started shutting down, I figured there'd be a little bit more time with this, but you know, there is the follow-up in Mario Maker 2 that is on their much more popular system. So I suppose that it was time to just go ahead and pull the plug and kind of funnel everyone over into the new games community if there are still people around playing Mario Maker 1. And I have seen a few comments, you know, when I poke my head into the dark abyss that is the internet about, you know, Nintendo should be like heavily discounting this game in the lead up to, you know, its demise. And I don't disagree with that at all. I think it'd be really nice if Nintendo just like, hey, this game, it's December 31st. This game is gone in 2 weeks. You know what? It's free. Everyone come download it. And you got 2 weeks. And you kind of treat it as like a demo even for Mario Maker 2. They could even like turn it into a marketing thing. Like at the very end of it, you know, when it goes dark, you get like the splash screen. Like, and now you can continue on Switch, that kind of thing. But, you know, just for like the sake of posterity or, you know, archiving for historical purposes, you know, you'd still be able to get a hard copy of this game. But, you know, if somebody doesn't want to go and track down a copy of Mario Maker for Wii U, you know, you could still... It'd be really nice to just, like, they gave this away as sort of like an application for your old Wii U that you still got hanging around. So, a couple of other things here. Doom Eternal is still coming to Switch. We got a release date for it. It is coming on December 8th, but it is only digital. And there was a bit of a hullabaloo around this game recently because people were having their... pre-orders canceled by different retailers and outlets, and it kind of led to some speculation about this game being just outright canceled because the pre-orders are being canceled. And Bethesda, you know, does what Bethesda does and kind of makes a murky situation worse because they're a little bit coy, or it might not even be intentional. It just might have been outright incompetence with how they were messaging, like if this game was canceled or not. But they eventually got everything straightened out by saying that the game was still coming, but it was going to be digital only, which is why pre-orders were being canceled for the physical version. And then it was like a few days after that that Nintendo and Bethesda just dropped the release date. So I don't know why, you know, if the game is out in like 5 days at time of recording here. So then they announced the release date like a few days ago. So if they knew the game was coming so soon, then why was the messaging all screwed up in the first place? I don't know. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. This thing was kind of botched, and it's really unfortunate that the physical version of this game no longer exists, that it's going to be digital only. It just kind of makes the sort of Switch ownership feel like second-class citizens in the gaming community. You know, it's I highly doubt that this game is going to be discounted. At time of recording here, I've checked the eShop a couple of times, and I have not seen a price tag for it. I think it would be foolish to assume that this game is going to be anything but $60, the full price for a full retail game. And it's kind of shitty that, you know, you're not getting like the full package. You don't get like the full ownership. Bethesda won't have like the overhead of dealing with like the physical packaging and shipping all that. So, you know, they should offer some sort of discount, and maybe they will. I don't think that I'm going to bet on that one. But yeah, it's real unfortunate. And it's there was something like this similarly this year with Outer Worlds, where it was going to be coming to Switch retail and digital, and then they also was going to be digital only, and then they eventually did the right thing and said, okay, it's going to be physical and digital, which is good, and that's the right way to do it. I don't think that Bethesda is going to turn this around and have a physical version coming, so better have about 19 gigabytes worth of space available on your SD cards, because if you want to play this game, you're going to need it. In an Animal Crossing update, there's now an island transfer tool, so you can, you know, bring over your data to a new Switch, or you can like split up profiles and things like that. So very cool, nice that they finally introduced that particular function. I think it's a long time coming, so good for them for finally doing it. And speaking of the updates, at time of recording here, they have started the sort of like wintry holiday kind of stuff, which means mushrooms disappeared, which is a bummer because I liked going around and picking up all those mushrooms. I put a lot of them in storage because I didn't find very many DIYs. I got like the lamps, and I got like, I think it was the wall, but there's like a table and like a stool that looks like a stump with mushrooms growing out. There's like a lot of really cool stuff, and I had this section of my island sort of sequestered for development that I want to make this mushroom forest, but you know, I only got the one thing, so I don't know. Hopefully mushroom DIYs will still be around and available so that I can finish that up. If not, I'm gonna be waiting until next year to finish out my mushroom forest. But oh, like the holiday stuff so far, it's just like snow sprinkling down every little bit throughout the day. And then also there is new stuff in the shop, like little gift type stuff that I've been buying, because I'm not exactly sure how that works. I didn't read up on the holiday update if there is any information, but I assume it'll be something like, you know, Halloween, where, you know, that night or that day you can go around and give gifts to people. Your different villagers. Speaking of like the holiday stuff, there was the Turkey Day, the Thanksgiving in the United States event, where there is that pink horrific turkey that came to your island and was cooking food. And you know, I participated in that for a little bit. I helped him with two of his recipes, and then he wanted more. But it was just kind of it was like the end of the day. It was like 7 p.m. and it was only going on for another couple hours before the event ended. And he asked for things that I had, and then he was asking for things that I didn't have and that I wasn't able to just get on my own. So I attempted a little bit to trade with some of the other villagers that were in their houses, but they were asking for things that I didn't have and I'd have to go catch or swim for. And you know, by the time we got to the third round, I was like, yeah, never mind. I don't really care about any of this like Turkey Day decorations or tableware or furniture, so I'm just gonna pull the plug on this and call it a night. Have my wife participate in a little bit more than I did, and think she got some of the rewards and didn't like any of them, so kind of wasted her time a little bit on that one. But speaking of wasting my time, I did have one round of gospel or gossip ready, but I guess I'm going to be doing it by myself because Wes and Ryan were not able to make it. Resident Evil Revelations 3 is in development for the Switch, or that's at least the scuttlebutt. There's some data mining done with some Capcom stuff, and it seems that that is one of the things that might be happening. I'm going to say gospel on this one, and I'm going to say this mostly because I want more participation from Capcom on the platform. They have been notably absent outside of Mega Man 11 and some ports like the Capcom Beat 'em Up Bundle or a couple of different versions of Street Fighter. And next year, hopefully, fingers crossed, could be a big one for Capcom on Switch with two versions of Monster Hunter. And if we're lucky, Resident Evil Revelations 3. It would be really, really cool to see a Resident Evil game coming to Switch, you know, physically anyways, and a new entry, because they have all those ports of, you know, Revelations 1 and 2 and the remake of 1 and 0 and 4, 5, and 6. So, you know, pretty good representation from the series so far, but it would be really nice to see a new one. I like the Revelations game. I think they're okay. I obviously have a soft spot for the classic Resident Evils, you know, 1 through Code Veronica are games that I really, really like. And, like, the Revelations series definitely isn't as action-focused as the game became in 4, 5, and 6. I probably put it on par with 4 in a sort of balance of action to sort of a puzzle solving and item collecting. But it was a little bit smaller, I suppose smaller scope than 4. There aren't as many like big action set pieces, or at least they sort of split it up in Revelations 1 between your, you know, action set pieces where, you know, you're playing as Jill and you have like a few action beats here and there, mostly moving around this creepy boat. And then when you're playing as Chris and you have like the big run and gun, or was it the other guy? No, I don't remember his name. Neither here nor there. The thing I liked most about Revelations 2 was the actual part where you're playing as Barry and there's the little girl with you, and you kind of had to do like this tag team stealth kind of stuff where the little girl would, you could sneak around and point out the weak spots, and then Barry could be stealthy and ambush an enemy and take him out with the knife and doing some melee stuff, which conserved ammo, which was always, you know, crucial in these sort of, I suppose, slower paced, more methodical Resident Evil games. And, you know, the Claire and Moira half of Revelations 2, you know, didn't have quite have like the same level of stealthiness to it, but had like the sort of tag team elements of, you know, stun an enemy with a well-timed flashlight beam and, you know, hit him with a crowbar, and then Claire come in with a finishing move. So, you know, there were some at least novel ideas about how you're engaging with enemies in both halves of that game. So hopefully Revelations 3 is coming and has a new fun idea along those same lines. But since I do have to pick a side, I'm going with gospel. I think it's happening. So I'm going to move over to some new releases for the month of November 2020. First up, Sukuna of Rice and Ruin came to the Switch on November the 10th. And this was a game that was on my radar. I was keeping an eye on this one. I actually had it pre-ordered, but I ended up canceling the pre-order because there were some other games that I ended up buying instead. You know, like I got a bunch of games on a discount, so I didn't want to overload the plate, so I just stuck Sukuna on a wish list so it doesn't get buried, because I think this game looks worthwhile. I think the 2D, so like a side-scrolling action platforming, has a lot of promise to it, where like the character kind of like jumps and grapples around on things. It's got a really nice visual style. I like the way it looks and the character models and like the bright whimsical color palette, I think looks really great. Though the one thing I'm a little bit iffy on is the sort of farming half of the game, where you're growing different types of rice. because it is kind of like two sides of the same coin. Like there's those sort of interstitial sections. They're not like so much, is my understanding, it's not so much structured as like this is a brief thing that you do. It is more of a even split between the two types of gameplay. Drawing a lot of comparisons to something like an ActRaiser in the way that the gameplay is split like that. So I think it looks interesting. I definitely don't want it to get buried, so I stuck it on the wish list. It shows some promise. I think it might end up being a cool game. Arcade Archives Gradius 2 came to the Switch on the 12th. And then Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory came out the next day on the 13th. Star Renegades came out on the 19th. And this is an interesting looking game. I didn't end up taking the plunge on this one because it had that that phrase procedurally generated associated with it, which made me a bit leery. But it is a role-playing game and looks to be more of like a Japanese style with the sort of battle setup that they're using. I don't know if it's strictly turn-taking, but it does have that sort of a side on where it looks like it would be a turn-taking or like an active time bar or something along those lines. The art style is really great. I don't know if it's using 2D sprites, but it has that sort of visual style to it where if it's not those 2D sprites, they're directly inspired by, you know, old school 2D sprite RPGs. A lot of detailed characters and environments. It looks really cool. Again, this is another one that I stuck on the wish list because I don't want to get to get buried under the deluge of games that's always coming out on the eShop. It's something to keep an eye on. And I was actually looking for a new RPG because I just had the urge, you know, probably about a week ago to start playing a new RPG. And I was looking through like the stuff I already have, seeing if there's an RPG I wanted to replay. Like, you know, something like a Battle Chasers or one of like the Final Fantasies that I have downloaded, or, you know, Octopath Traveler. Nothing was really striking me from, you know, on any of my collections or like anything on my DS or 3DS. Didn't really have anything that I wanted to get into immediately. So I started looking through the eShop on my wish list of games that see if there was any RPGs there that I wanted to download. But I did notice that Banner of the Maid was about on a half off sale. And it's a tactical game with some leveling up to it. So, you know, a tactical RPG, I suppose. So I ended up downloading that one, even though it's not strictly an RPG. Which I'll get into some thoughts on that on the mini show. So suffice it to say, it's not exactly what I was looking for, but I don't have the urge to buy a new game now anymore, a new RPG and start up a new one, because now I have some other stuff to get to. But anyway, so I stuck Star Renegades on the list so it can sit with the other RPGs that I plan on playing one day, but who knows when that'll be. But over to the main event, Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity came out on the Switch on the 20th. And this game, developed by Omega Force, published by Nintendo, I think Age of Calamity really succeeds in elevating the Warriors format with this sort of veneer of Breath of the Wild, this Breath of the Wild coat of paint put on it. So in fairness to the Warriors series, I've only played Hyrule Warriors 1, Fire Emblem Warriors, and now Age of Calamity. And I've played almost 20 hours. I'm in the middle of Chapter 4. I just finished the Tower in the Akala region, which is cool to revisit that region. It's my favorite region in the game. You do spend a lot of time indoors in that particular mission, which is a bit of a bummer because there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in the sort of exterior of that tower, like these old battlefields where, you know, you see these pillars and like massive areas with guardians, shut down guardians. So, you know, it seems like a lot of cool stuff could be going on there maybe later in the game. We'll see. But anyway, I digress. Back to the 30,000 foot view here. I think that this game succeeds in elevating that Warriors franchise because it has a really fantastic mix of character styles. It has a really malleable Link with a bunch of different weapons, all things from Breath of the Wild, you know, single-handed swords and shields, two-handed swords, spears, clubs, etc. You know, the you have your bow as a special attack. So boomerangs are in there. So, you know, he's a character that has a lot of different styles where you can play as. You also have, like, your four guardians, Zelda, Impa. I don't want to go too far into spoilers here. So, but even with that small handful of characters, there's a ton of variety to how they play. Not only in, like, the combats that you're pulling off, but like just the way you're inputting those combat combos. You can't just, like, switch over to a new character and play them the exact same way. The sort of real basic way of engaging with these warrior games is you have a weak and a strong attack, and you know you do your weak attack a certain number of times, and then finish it off with a strong attack. And depending on how many weak attacks you used previously, it will change your strong attack into something else. So you know, 2 weeks and the strong is going to be different from 3 weeks followed by a strong. And that's been like the pretty typical way of engaging in combat with these games to this point. Age of Calamity does differently is that there are characters who, you know, you're not necessarily focused on doing that that same sort of pattern of combos. If you're playing as Link, where it's pretty typical setup, and you switch over to Zelda, Zelda's actually, you know, going to have a succession of heavy hits. So you're doing like 1 week and then two heavy, or 1 week and then three heavy, and it's going to be something different. So, you know, even just like the basic way you're interfacing with these characters is going to be different from character to character. Urbosa is one of the standouts to me. I really like that character. Revali plays very differently because you have to spend a lot of time in the air. Each of the characters is going to have like their own special skill that you're executing with the right trigger. Link is going to have a bow. Urbosa charges up and can like extend her heavy attacks using her electricity powers. Revali flies. Mipha puts down a sort of water geyser and then kind of transport it to it and shoot up it and do some aerial combos with that. I think it also really succeeds at elevating the Warriors format, which is with the grand scope, with incorporating the Breath of the Wild map with its side missions and unlockables instead of having like this grid that like in Hyrule Warriors 1, you have like that grid that you're moving through with like specific tasks that you're pulling off. Instead, you get like the big Breath of the Wild map, and different nodes will activate depending on what missions and side stuff you've been doing. It'll open up the map even further and give you more stuff to do. And sometimes it's side missions, sometimes it's just like use your loot to unlock this certain thing, and it will give you like a shop where you can buy more stuff or different types of loot, or it'll give you upgrades to your characters, to their like their hearts or their special meter or their combos, unlock new stuff like that. So I think it does a good job of making you feel like you're always have something to engage on this sort of macro scale with the map. But you know, I talked quite a bit about the character variety and how they fight and combo in different ways. For all that character variety, there's not a whole lot of variety to the mission structure. It's a lot of, you know, get to this spot and take out this boss, you know, capture some stuff all the way, or kill these moblins that get in your way. They do try to mix it up a little bit with the Divine Beast missions, which are okay. I think they give the game a fun sense of scale. It's cool to be, you know, riding around in this giant robot thing and see how tiny all of the enemies are, especially like the bigger ones like Hinoxes and then Lionels. You can see just how tiny they look in comparison to the big elephant or lizard or bird you're piloting. So far in the game, I have piloted the bird, the elephant, and the lizard, not the camel yet. I think I've enjoyed the bird the most so far because the elephant and the lizard, you're just kind of on this corridor, working your way through like from start to finish, point A to point B, and destroying everything in your path. Whereas the bird is more of like an all range mission, to put using Star Fox terms, where you know here's this arena that you're in, you want to take out these enemies, you want to take out these fortresses, and you can just kind of fly around and aim at whatever you want. There's a couple of different turrets, I suppose, gun units you can swap between. They'll change up your angle of attack, which is pretty cool. I think it's all these missions are just a stark contrast to the fast, frenetic action of the main game. It's a little bit of a breather, but it's also something to where it's more of like an interstitial thing. It's not like a 50-50 split like I was talking about in Sukuna. And I think that is to the game's benefit. I think if there were more of these Divine Beast missions, it would drag down the pace of the game because it is a slower moving part. And these missions are intentionally kept brief. You're like doing these things for 3 or 4 minutes, and that's quite enough of it because, you know, you don't have the high energy mobility and crazy combos that you're doing. You don't have, you know, the necessity to dodge attacks and counter and, you know, do your flurry attacks. So they're cool ideas. It's cool that they're in there, but I'm glad that it's so far a limited aspect of the game. So landscapes are also a major element lifted from Breath of the Wild. You go to some places that were ruined in Breath of the Wild. You can kind of see them sort of restored and lively and, you know, have much more vibrant colors to them because there's, you know, shops and things in these towns. I'm skeptical these are one-to-one recreations of the sort of Breath of the Wild geography. I suppose, like, unless I was looking at them back-to-back, I wouldn't be able to make a definitive call on that aspect or not. I think one of the reasons where it doesn't seem like it's an exact recreation is the sort of limited paths you can take throughout any of these particular stages. You know, you can't do things like climb. So these are mostly just corridors that lead to larger arenas, or, you know, corridors that lead to keeps that you get that you can take down. You know, this isn't, that's not really a criticism. I don't think that this Warriors game should be recreating all of the mechanics of Breath of the Wild. So, you know, I don't think that the game should have, you know, climbing or weapon durability or character stamina, that kind of stuff. Because, you know, Omega Force wasn't trying to remake Breath of the Wild with Warriors combat. They just set out to make a Warriors game and implemented these Breath of the Wild mechanics in order to have a greater depth of gameplay than a separate Warriors game might have. I think that's to the game's benefit. I think they had a good idea of what it was they were trying to make and didn't try to fit the Warriors peg into the Breath of the Wild hole. It was more about, like, how do we take these fun mechanics from Breath of the Wild and sort of adapt them into this gameplay style that we already have? I think it was smart. I think it's a much smoother blend of mechanics going in that direction. I think if they tried to wedge the sort of like high energy combat of a Warriors game into a big open world, a lot that, like, mostly based on exploration of Breath of the Wild, I think you would end up with this more disjointed fusion of elements. I think they made the right choice by saying, like, no, let's have this Warriors game and take all these different things. Okay, flurry attacks, those are great. Let's do a well-timed dodge and have a flurry attack from Breath of the Wild. Or here's the Sheikah Slate. Okay, we can use those as counters. Different enemies will attack you in different ways. This one has a spear, so he's going to charge you. So you're going to want to, you know, use the ice to set up a barrier, and that will give you a counter and give you an opening to wear down their shields. Yeah, definitely a better decision from a design standpoint that they made there. There's a weapon fusion system, which gives some depth to a sort of weapon creation mechanic. There are like passive abilities that weapons have, and you can fuse weapons together in order to create a better weapon that has multiple passive abilities that will do things like, you know, increase the chance of enemies dropping items, that kind of thing. You can also spend your rupees not only to fuse weapons together, but also to level characters up. You can't use rupees to level up your highest character, but what you can do is use rupees to level up the characters that are lower levels than them, of course, to kind of keep everyone generally even, which is what I'm doing. Link, for me, I really enjoy playing as Link, so that character is, you know, a good 7 or 8 levels higher than everybody else, but everyone else I keep at a general even level, even if I'm not using them. There are sometimes missions where you have required characters, so I don't ever want to get caught in a situation where a character I don't use is severely underleveled, so I have to spend some time, you know, either leveling them up separately or grinding. God forbid, I have to do some grinding. I think that having the ability to keep things everyone even is also a very beneficial idea. I have heard of some tech issues, almost exclusively frame rate issues. I haven't experienced anything myself to this point that interrupts gameplay. Anyway, frame rate could be dropping during special moves or very busy sequences when, you know, you are doing something where a lot of enemies on the field, or you're dodging around, or there's a lot of attacks going on. There are times where, you know, there are 2, 3, 4 boss type characters on the screen, and they're all doing something at the same time, so things might get a little choppy there. I don't really have an eye for this stuff unless it starts to interrupt gameplay. Like, I didn't notice the frame rate issues in Link's Awakening remake until it was directly pointed out to me, because it never really affected the gameplay. So for all I know, the frame rate could be taking big hits, but because it's still kind of moving the way I'm expecting it to, I'm not really noticing. Now, hopefully that keeps up. But like, that would be like the thing that would make me notice it, and then I wouldn't be able to unsee it if, you know, the frame rate became so bad that it was affecting the way I was trying to attack. But yeah, I'm having a good time with this game. I am probably going to finish it up within the next couple weeks, probably give some wrap-up thoughts on the mini show if I have any. I recommend it. I'm having a good time. And finally, Picross S5 came out on the 26th. This was another sort of a surprise. It was like announced and then dropped, which I suppose is appropriate for a Picross game, not a super huge franchise. I played through S4 earlier this year, and this is another one I stuck on the wish list because I would like to do some more Picross puzzles, maybe when the schedule clears up a little bit, or maybe if we go into quarantine again and I got a lot of time to kill. These are our highly addictive puzzle games. I had a really good time playing through S4 and doing like the big puzzles and figuring all these things out. Really fun. And finally, let's wrap things up with some games coming out in December. A couple of these games are already out because I'm a little bit late recording here. A little bit late doing the second recording here. I lost the entire batch of first audio that I recorded yesterday. So here we go again. Coming soon. Empire of Sin is coming out on the 1st for $40. I was a bit surprised that this is coming out at a budget price. That's kind of cool, though. You know, this game, the actual sort of strategy battle system, it doesn't really look all that interesting. But I suppose, like, if you're looking for a game where the sort of narrative choices you're making are affecting like your party members, I think that this game might have some value there, because it seems like that's how they're pitching it, is as a game like where you kind of like weave this tangled web and you can get all these characters involved in your sort of gangster squad and, you know, go up against these other gangster squads in order to increase your influence over organized crime. So, you know, if that sort of narrative element appeals to you, there might be something there. Sam & Max Save the World is out on the 2nd for $20, which is pretty cool. Sheeran the Wanderer, The Tower of Fortune, and The Dice of Fate is out on December 2nd as well for $20. So another budget price game there. I've played a Sheeran the Wanderer game. I have the Wii game, which I don't know if that was an original game or a port back when it came out. I'm not super familiar with the Mystery Dungeon series. And this Tower of Fortune and Dice of Fate is also a port, and I think it's a port of a game that came out before that Wii version did, if I'm not mistaken. I might be mistaken. But either way, it's just not a new entry in the series. But these games, these Sheer and the Wanderer Mystery Dungeon games, are very hardcore roguelikes. Not roguelites, which is sort of the popular sort of gameplay template that a lot of independent games are using now, where there's a sort of implication of procedural generation and doing multiple runs. But in a roguelite, there's also this sort of implication of being a bit more friendly, where, you know, dying is not discouraged. It becomes more of a part of the gameplay loop, where you die, you'll be able to carry things over to your next run, you'll learn something, you'll probably have a good chance to upgrade your character, or at least have a better access to upgrades your next time through. You're going to be better off for dying than you were before you died. That is not what Sheer and the Wanderer is like. This is a very traditional roguelike where you enter a dungeon, you're on a grid, the enemy moves when you move. If you die in the dungeon, you lose everything, your items, your progress, you get kicked out, you got to start over. So you have to approach it from, you know, a much more methodical standpoint. If you think that things are about to go bad, it's better to leave and, you know, stash some items, stash some cash, save if you've, you know, so you can have your level up progress intact, and then go back in and try again. You know, dying is a pretty extreme penalty in these games, as opposed to a lot of the other roguelites that have been coming out over the past few years. So tread with caution on this one. Roguelikes are not my particularly favorite genre. But if that is something that is appealing to you, these Mystery Dungeon games seem to be pretty legit representations of that roguelike genre. Immortals Fenyx Rising is coming to the Switch on the 3rd for $60. This game just continues to be uninteresting, but it's a pretty big release, pretty important release for the Switch, so there it is. Morbid the Seven Acolytes is coming out on the same day for $25, and this is a game that we talked about when it was announced, and just has this really, like, grotesque, gothic visual style to it. Very, like, occultic as well. It's a really interesting-looking game, almost Lovecraftian. And in the sort of, like, character models and the way, like, it uses gore and body horror, that kind of stuff. It's an interesting-looking game. It definitely has its own flair to it. So that's one that, you know, if you're into that sort of visual style as well as, you know, 2D action games, might be worth checking out. Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon and the Blade of Light is coming out on the 4th for $6. And I am super excited for this. I'm really happy that they are bringing this out and, you know, doing the sort of improvements to it with, you know, the way they're implementing saves and rewind. I did play the remake of this on the original DS, which, you know, I didn't particularly care for the visual style, but it definitely took some adjusting to, oh, now that I say it out loud, I can't remember if this is the case. I don't remember if it had the weapons triangle or not, but the original Fire Emblem here, this is like the original Famicom Fire Emblem being brought over to the Switch, does not have the weapons triangle, so, you know, you do have a little bit more flexibility with who you want to take into a fight, but it is it just kind of limits your tactics and the way that you're positioning your units and who you want to go up against who in a fight. But very cool that this game is coming out. It'd be really awesome if they kept this sort of thing going on the Switch. I'm very excited to get into this. As I mentioned before, I bought Banner of the Maid about a week back. As soon as Fire Emblem comes out, that will go on the back burner, and I'll be playing Fire Emblem probably as my main game with a couple of things on the side. Fitness Boxing 2 is coming out on the same day there, on the 4th, for $50. Doom Eternal, like I mentioned at the top of the show, is out on the 8th. Probably $60. I think it'd be silly to assume otherwise. And then Collection of Saga, Final Fantasy Legend, is coming out on the 15th. And I think that one's $20, if I'm not mistaken. I forgot to write down a price for that. It's cool. It's cool that this collection is coming to the Switch, that just, you know, Square Enix is kind of doing a follow-up to Collection of Mana with Collection of Saga here. If you're not familiar, Saga games, when they came to the Game Boy, it was called Final Fantasy Legend. I think there's three installments that they're putting out in this collection. And they're different from, at the time, like the Final Fantasy brand was used to elevate other things like Saga games or the original Final Fantasy Adventure on Game Boy was in the Seiken Densetsu series, which is the Mana series. When it came to Super Nintendo, they gave it the Mana branding and became its own thing. But when they had it on the Game Boy, they gave it that Final Fantasy label to, you know, have it be a bit more visible, a little bit more recognizable. But these Saga games in this collection, they are different from Final Fantasy in the way that you kind of have this invisible hand directing the growth and development of your characters. A game like Final Fantasy II for the Famicom, it came out to like on the Dawn of Souls collection on Game Boy Advance, kind of adopts some of these ideas in Saga games, where you are developing your characters through the actions they are taking rather than strictly by leveling up. So if you want a character to be a proficient fighter, you're going to use the attack command and use, you know, the equipped weapons that you want them to improve with. If you want them to be a mage, you need to use a lot of magic and improve your magic stats and learn new spells by using magic. If you want them to be your tank character, you know, you want them on the front lines, absorbing the most hits, taking the most damage. It's kind of how Final Fantasy II became known as Stop Hitting Yourself the Game, because you could manipulate these things by attacking your own characters. So it can make them tankier by engaging in a fight, but then spend some time attacking yourself rather than the enemy, so that you're giving yourself a better chance of buffing up those stats. And the Saga games really continue this sort of philosophy of having, you know, how battles are playing out and the actions you are taking affect the trajectory of your character. You see this as well on the 3DS with games like Legend of Legacy, Alliance Alive, where I think Legend of Legacy did a really good job of having that style of game be something really fun and interesting because of also how it incorporated exploration and filling out your map. I think Alliance Alive tripped up a little bit because it try to have a heavier presentation of a narrative and more characters that you had to keep track of and level up. Anyway, I digress. These Saga games are interesting, not for the faint of heart, definitely very hardcore RPGs. And, you know, you also have the burden of time placed on these Final Fantasy Legend games as well, where, you know, you have to know that you're getting into like these archaic, very esoteric RPGs. But if you are, you know, really into Saga games or, you know, role playing, I think that there's definitely some value here. The BitTrip games are coming to the Switch on December the 25th, Christmas Day, for $5 each. And there's BitTrip collection, all of these games, there were six of them that came out on WiiWare. And it's so interesting. Like, it is really cool that there are WiiWare games coming out on Switch. It is so cool that, you know, there are, I don't know for sure if these games ever came out on anything except WiiWare, but like, now that that has shut down, you know, they're re-releasing these things in a more modern platform to be more accessible. I hope that other studios and publishers are able to do that with some WiiWare stuff as well, now that, you know, they can't be accessed anymore. Something like Final Fantasy, My Life as a King, or My Life as a Dark Lord, Dark Lord Lost Winds. You know, there were a handful of games that are still sort of sequestered on the Wii eShop that you just can't get anywhere else. But these Bit Trip games, there's Beat, Core, Void, Runner, Fate, and Flux. The only one that I really have any experience with is Runner, and I only have experience with that in this sort of like sort of tangentially through Runner 2, because there were parts of Runner 2 where, you know, you enter like a sort of void and play through 8-bit or more like pixel art type of sections of levels. I don't know if they were directly pulled from Runner on WiiWare, but that's like the sort of style of Runner on WiiWare, whereas, you know, Runner 2, Runner 3 are definitely, you know, get the polygon models and the more bombastic backdrops and stuff like that. But I really like the Runner games. I even like Runner 3, which is a game that, you know, isn't really well liked, and I don't quite understand why. But neither here nor there. I started playing the series on Wii U with Runner 2. Really like that game. It is such an interesting sort of hypnotic experience where, you know, you have a bunch of different mechanics at your disposal. You know, you're not controlling the momentum of your character. You're constantly running forward, but you are controlling a jump, a kick, a slide, sometimes like a block. There's a bunch of directional stuff with where you're blocking projectiles coming at you. You're doing wall jumps, double jumps. And what you end up doing is, as you progress further in the level, there's a sort of rhythm to it. And the actions that you are taking, you know, kicking through barriers, sliding under enemies, jumping over pits, align with the sort of rhythm of the melody of the song that's playing in the background. And the better you do as you're playing through the level, the more prominent the music becomes. And you kind of go into this trance where you are just kind of staring at the screen, not really focusing on anything in particular, just kind of letting it all wash over you. And it becomes like, You forget what your hands are doing, and it all turns into muscle memory. And then by the time you finish the level, you kind of snap out of it like, okay, I'm done. And you realize you just had like a stretch of like the last 20-30% of the level where you weren't really paying attention to what you're doing anymore. Like, you kind of entered this meditative state. And I probably talked about it when I talked about Runner 2. When this game came out, I compared it to like playing music, to where eventually you just learn like the notes that you're reading on the staff, and you are not like, okay, I see that one, I know that these are the notes displayed, so I know that my fingers have to go here. It's just you're looking at it and you do it, and you don't have to think about like, okay, this is how I position to do a G chord. Your eyes see it, your fingers know it, and it's like your conscious mind, it doesn't get involved in the process at all. It is super interesting. I have not experienced a whole lot like that in video games. Runner, these Runner games really pull that off nicely. And finally, at some point during this holiday season, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World should be coming to Switch. This was announced a couple of months ago as coming out holiday season, and, you know, we're pretty much into it, so it's a bit strange that we don't have a solid release date yet. Hopefully we get that within, you know, the next few days. That'd be kind of nice to know when that one's coming out, because I'm looking forward to that. It'd be nice to have another, like, co-op beat-em-up for a game night kind of thing to go through. Because, you know,
by all accounts, this game is pretty good, and it's something that kind of disappeared from the landscape. It was like, I think, on PS3, and then it was not available on PS3 anymore, so it kind of disappeared into the void. And now, allegedly, it's coming back, but no solid release date yet. Hopefully soon. But that is going to wrap up the coming soon games for December of 2020. Up next on the Nintendo show, we're going to be getting back together for a Pokemon show. Probably talk a little bit more about the Isle of Armor, and then maybe do a quiz show. We'll see. See what we'll circle the wagons and see what we want to do for that one. After that, we will do the mini show, and I got a bunch of games that I want to get into that are not new releases, but I think are interesting, fun games. Banner of the Maid, already mentioned. Return of the Obra Dinn, I'll probably mention that one again, because I've been making progress, slow-going progress, but I've been getting through it. A bunch of other games that I think are going to be worth getting into. After that, we'll have the retro show. Not sure which N64 games are next up on the list, but we will have something worth talking about there. Keep it game-focused. And then we'll wrap it all up at the end of the month with the official show. The official show for December is going to be a little bit different. We will have, at least a new release to talk about with Fire Emblem. Maybe Doom Eternal, seeing if anyone else gets that one. But the big topic is we'll do our end of the year sort of review of the Switch, where we give it, the letter grade and talk about all of the games that came out in 2020. I'll be grading a little bit of a curve because of the pandemic, but not too much of a curve. We're gonna be objective about this. But anyway, on that note, I think that's the end. Till next time.